Looking at 5G or looking into 5G, but taking into account different existing networks like trees, crystals,
water,
fungi. Mm-hmm. So, we already had a conversation with Roel on the electromagnetic spectrum, and then it came up that. This idea of that maybe the focus of this research thread can be to look at what the standard is that is set for this 5G to define when humans are not harmed or harmed, and then what is left out of this standard, like what is not taken into account. Maybe I can put the phone out of the wind. So you said that you have been taking, like, that you have been working on this?
Yeah, so I have a somewhat masochistic interest in standardization. Mm-hmm. Because standards are a place where power sediments. Mm-hmm. Because it decides on how society gets ordered. Mm-hmm. It sets a protocol for how we relate or not relate. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, 5G is a very strange beast because it's actually not a standard. Uh-huh. It is much more of a marketing term that is used to frame it as a as an inevitable force, because we had 2G, 3G, 4G, so 5G is better and we actually need 6G, right? Okay. So 5G is actually a combination of a lot of different standards together, and they haven't even been finalized. Mm-hmm. And the interesting part where I look at is how standards get produced. And internet standards traditionally get defined in the Internet Engineering Task Force. Mm-hmm. And the Internet Engineering Task Force is a quite informal body, and it only defines open standards, which are voluntary. So one of the credos that you will hear a lot there is, we are not the protocol police. So the three values that come back over and over again in the IETF, one of them is permissionless innovation. So you should not have to ask anyone permission to be able to roll out anything on the internet. And that is a direct response to two different things. One of the things is the telco era, where the intelligence was in the network and the endpoints were relatively stupid.
Telco era?
The telecommunication provider era.
Okay.
So, and that is what sets the internet apart from a governance standpoint from previous networks, is that previous global communication networks were standardized and operated via governmental and intergovernmental bodies. Mm-hmm. And the standards were devised in the International Telecommunications Union, mm-hmm. which is a body that even precedes the UN. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the oldest UN bodies, also in the sense that it's older than the UN.
One of the first transnational bodies, no?
True,
yeah.
Dating back to the telegram. Mm-hmm. And the telegram. Mm-hmm. And what is set in the ITU are actually not open standards, because the ITUR, as Roel might have talked about.
And ITU is something else than ITF?
Yes, the IETF is an informal standards body, and which creates open standards, so you can follow them or not follow them.
Yeah. Okay.
The ITU creates standards that are enforced. So, and the ITU has three different departments. Sorry, I come up with a lot of lists and stuff. It is it's the ITUT, ITUR, and ITUD. The ITUR is ITU Department for Radio, and so it sets the spectrum and how the spectrum is used, and what is used for what, also to ensure that there is interoperation between between countries. The ITUT sets the telecom standards, so what your traffic should look like on a telecoms network, and the ITUD is there to spread the use of telecommunication to parts of the world where it's not. So what is an interesting side effect of ITUD is that they create a lot of template legislation that very often gets copy-pasted in developing countries. So if you look at African telecommunication regulation, it's almost all copy-pasted from the ITUR. So in that sense, you could say it's either a... the ITUD, sorry, yeah. Yes. So in that sense, the ITUD can be seen as a developmental body, but can also be interpreted as a colonial body. In that. But it has, in anyhow, a lot of influence. But the only people who can vote in the ITU are states. And in the IETF, everyone can come and participate. You don't even need to be a member, you just need to be participating on a mailing list or come to the meetings, of which there are 3 per year. Where the decision making goes very differently, so like for instance, to find if there is consensus, and this is another of unofficial motto of the IETF, it says we reject kings or presidents, we believe in rough consensus and running code. So if people want to resolve a conflict in the IETF, this a mechanism to resolve conflict is for instance done by humming. And humming is what you think it is. It's a lot of people in a room that are given an option, and if you are for one option, you hum. It's like, do you believe in option A? Hum now. And do you believe in option B? Other people hum. And then a working group chair will see what is the balance. So it's very different from the voting that happens in the ITU. So when the Internet Protocol arose, and the internet arose, it was all about doing things that you could develop and you did not need to ask permission for. So in that sense, the IETF is a radical break from the ITU, and the internet is also a response to telecom networks where you could not do anything that you could not just deploy your new protocols.
And how do they relate? Is the ITF as a inspirational source for the ITU?
No, so the IETF is a direct response. The establishment of the IETF is a response to the rigid organizational form of the ITU and the telecom sector.
So Google cannot be in ITU then?
Exactly. Only as a sector member, they do advise governments and they are very present, but they cannot vote. But what was very interestingly, just as a small side note, that once I was in the ITU, I was part of the delegation of the Dutch government, and I was arguing for a point, which was very strange because I'm by no means a big believer in nation states, but here I was, Mr. Ten Hoever, on behalf of the Netherlands, arguing a point about spectrum, actually, against the UK delegation, and then later I found out that the person on the UK delegation was actually a Microsoft representative. So in that sense, I first thought that the state was being hollowed out by other actors. But now increasingly I think that also other bodies are being used by states as proxies. And this is also you see now in the 5G discussion on Huawei versus Cisco hardware or versus Nokia and Ericsson hardware. you see a European bloc, a US bloc, and a Chinese bloc pushing their own companies to exert their own hegemony and control over data streams.
Okay, you have to explain this a little, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so, sorry, I'm making a lot of jumps and and a lot of abbreviations as well. So, sorry about that. So, 5G is actually a combination of technologies, and it's not one. So, but it's being all folded in under the umbrella of 5G, so that governments will go for it. And that's the weird thing, because to make it even a bit more complicated, 5G gets developed in a body that's called the 3GPP, the Third Generation Protocol Partnership. And this is not an open body like the IETF or a governmental body like the ITU, it's a closed industry body where telecommunication providers sit together to think how they are going to push the new protocol. But they do strive for their protocols to be adopted in the ITU. So they pre-cook something that they will then get legislated in the ITU. And in that sense, 5G is a response against the response of the IETF against the ITU to get more control over the networks. So where the IETF was for an open general purpose network, whereas you could, on which you could do whatever you wanted, this is a strike back from the telecommunication providers to say, no, we're going to give back control to the big telecom operators.
This is why they do the slicing.
Exactly. Because the slicing is nothing more than virtual networks, which could be done easily on the internet, but they want to standardize it because it's about the control of the streams. And the control of the streams, by virtue of the technological design, but also of the political body in which it is sanctioned, then goes from anyone who wants to operate the internet to telecommunication providers. So, and this you also see in the consolidation of the telecom sector, that you see that whereas there was with the commercialization of the internet, there was a huge, where all of a sudden academic bodies, small companies, internet service providers that were providing services and connected to this network of networks that was the internet. But now we see that number of companies, especially running the lower level infrastructure, are getting small, are getting fewer in number, in which telecom providers play a much bigger role.
And that's why you're saying the players inside the 3GPP are this EU bloc, US bloc, Chinese bloc?
Yes, and
they're related to specific companies. Could you repeat them?
Yes, so these are mostly the large 10 largest telecom providers in the world. Deutsche Telekom, China Telecom, Verizon, AT&T. And these are also the ones that are now providing, Tata, also huge from India. And so you see these are now all like very large companies that are related to nation states somewhat. And that is like the resurgence of the geopolitical in the techno-social.
Yeah. And how is this fight going, how are they negotiating?
So the negotiation in the 3GPP takes away from the open and transparent process in bodies like the IETF, because there everything is open, everyone can participate. The 3GPP, no. Not everyone can join the meeting, not everything is open, not all standards are accessible, and definitely not the communications and the decisions are open.
So who's in and who decides who's in?
The industry bodies. And you need to pay a significant fine to be able to participate for over 10,000 of euros per year. And it depends on the size of your company, and that also decides the amount of voting power you have. So there you also see a breach with the IETF. Then it goes back to voting blocks and concrete power. So you really see institutionalized power on predefined networks. So the I would rather characterize 5G as a coup rather than as a technology. So, and if it's a network, it's a political network and not a technical network. Because 5G, if you look at the standards, you could potentially build community networks on 5G. Because they need mesh networking, for instance, to be able to, for cars to talk to each other. So, and if that, if the traffic for cars would go via a provider and then back to the other car, the latency would be far too long in order to prevent an accident. So they do allow for car-to-car connections, but with this you could also imagine setting up a network without a telco provider whatsoever. But what they are banking on is that with these closed standards that they have, based on their own hardware, no one will be able to create the open hardware that can facilitate the 5G protocol. So in that way, they're undermining the ability to build open source, open hardware 5G networks, because they are setting the rules.
And they're not communicating about them.
No. Well, they in marketing terms, because, and it worked perfectly, because every country in the world is now jumping and screaming to say that they want to be the first to implement it. And this is so effective that it's not just states, it's blocks. And it's also European Commission, for instance, providing money to build 5G testbeds. So these are democratic governments giving money to some of the biggest companies in the world in order to help them implement the things that are going to benefit these companies the most. So it is a government industrial complex in the telecom area. So the.
How are the companies that right now, through the processes of IETF, etc., still constructed a kind of application hegemony, like Google, etc.? Like, how are they relating to this change, this proposed change in the infrastructure? They're trying to join in, or they are?
Well, some are participating in the 3GPP as well, but it's a very different mode of operation. So it's much more the telcos that feel accustomed in that. So it's also a change in affordance structure, that like the engineers that are used to working in the IETF really are at a loss at the ITU, because they're like, these people don't understand, this kind of negotiation doesn't work. So it really takes a kind of old school ITU telecom engineer to speak the language and the discourse in the 3GPP. So it's a lot of the people that worked on earlier telecom standards that you can also now find back in the 3GPP.
Because they want to keep using this old telecom infrastructure, and exactly, they know about it, so they can, okay.
So it's kind of the internet people thought they won the war against the telcos, but now the telcos, via different means of consolidation, but also through new fora of standard setting, are trying to get more controls over the data plane.
Mm-hmm. Because basically the work of the telecom operator is no longer profitable.
Exactly. So they need, and they, in this, they are facilitated by the worst are always like the most opportunistic, horrible people are the equipment providers, because they are happy to service anyone who can help them sell more machines. and they need new ways to sell more equipment. And now they have 5G, which needs more hardware, new modems, and the network for 5G. As you know, with the tree is an obstacle. The millimeter waves, they go much less far. So you're gonna sell a lot of equipment because we need a lot of routers, right?
So this is Cisco.
Ericsson, exactly.
So Nokia.
Yeah, but the interesting thing is that there is a struggle, but these are none of these are our friends, right? They're the content providers. Those are the other people, and they are fighting back.
Via
means of CDNs. Content distribution networks. So they colonize the internet by also undermining the... I mentioned that there were three principles in the IETF. Mm. One was permissionless innovation. The other one is openness. And the third one is end-to-end. So that the intelligence is at the end nodes and not in the networks, which goes against the telco paradigm, right? Yeah. But now these... content distribution providers, they do not want intelligent networks because they want control over the data streams, because they do not want to share it, because they want to harvest all the data and they want to serve you their data as soon as possible, because with every millisecond it takes longer to load a website, you'll be annoyed and distracted. In the attention economy, it's about hyperconnectivity and hyperattention, right? So.
But also because being things in cloud, you all of a sudden have much more back and forth processing that needs to happen.
Exactly. And now they want this cloud to be as close to you as possible, so it can serve you as fast as possible. And they are not dependent anymore on telcos or transit providers for the transportation of the traffic. So for instance, I'm sitting here in Antwerp and I want to see a Netflix video. I think I'm communicating with Netflix in the US or Spotify in Sweden. But actually, I'm talking to a server which is in the edge network of my internet service provider. So my traffic from Netflix does not go from the US to here via networks of telcos. No, it goes to my local content distribution network, where a lot of the things I will want to see or hear is already stored near me.
Like,
so you're
cache?
Not so
like
it's cache. A cache. A CDN is a cache.
But located physically in a data center.
Exactly, a data center near you.
Implementing a lot more data centers.
A lot more data centers and hyper-located data centers.
Iceland.
Well, what Google started with having many different data centers through the world.
Exactly.
I just need some clarification. I haven't really got into that. The CDNs operate as an actual cache, meaning that they're content neutral, or would you say, hey, I'm Netflix, I would like to have my data here? You know what I mean?
No, they're mercenaries. So
yeah,
they,
right.
You have.
So not a true cache, right?
You have ones that provided. You can take. If you are a content provider, even if you have a simple website, you can use Cloudflare.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
Cloudflare is a commonly known CDN, because it doesn't make sense for you with your little website to have servers all over the world.
Mm.
But if your website in this day and age gets a little bit popular, you will get a lot of traffic and also bad traffic. You'll get DDoSed, you'll get attacked, it just happens. So if you come over a certain threshold, you almost cannot run your server yourself anymore. So you're reliant on a CDN. And that CDN is happy to provide you that service, but then also analyze your traffic and have access to that. So
is
running
this something you activate?
Yes, it's a service you buy or you get, but yeah, there's no such thing.
But
as
would it be? I think it might be wrong to call it a cache, right?
Well, it's a cache for a specific service.
I mean, it's a mirror, right? It's not really
well,
a cache.
Not necessarily, yeah. Because it tries through machine learning or whatever,
yeah,
to see what is regularly requested.
Right.
Yeah.
And then it caches what is regularly requested and then tries to stay on top of what is
right.
needed, so it only needs to download it once.
But out of a specific set of customers. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah,
so it is,
yeah.
It's in between.
Right, okay.
And this is a way to get around the limitation of TCP/IP as being a slow...
Exactly, and for that reason, QUIC was invented. But I'll talk about QUIC later tonight, which is another protocol. A lot of abbreviations,
yeah.
but so the CDNs try to fight the network control of the network operators because they just want to communicate with you, and they don't want the networks to be in between as little as possible. So they encrypt the hell out of. They try to be as close to you as possible. And when you request something, they try to encrypt everything so that they cannot see what's going on, but they also have no control to reroute it in a way that...
That's the reason for encryption.
Exactly. I'm giving away all the hints of my talk tonight, but I'll use other abbreviations.
No, it's good to hear it guys, so, I mean, don't worry. So if we then think of all these studies on the negative consequences for trees, but also for insects, for maybe cancer related to that 5G network. Is that something that's taken into account in these negotiations, or...?
I have to tread carefully here, because I actually think that worrying about the radiation levels is a bit of a distraction. Because there is quite a lot of research done on a radiation difference, and the only significant variation that is found is the heating up of tissue. And that's what you know when you call for a long time or you sleep on your phone, that you that your ear heats up or a bit behind it. Having said that, just like the effects of MDMA, we haven't known it for very long, so we do not know what the long-term impacts are. But there has been no controlled study that has shown any effective impact. So, whereas it's definitely something to be concerned about, but I think a lot of people are concerned about that particular issue, whereas we haven't seen a huge uptick in related disease to that, but we do see a huge reordering of our information societies. So the radiation part.
And not only that, and urban space.
Oh yeah, totally. So the healthcare issues. Mm-hmm. I do not want to minimize them. They might be there, but we haven't seen a lot of evidence.
But and basically, worse than the phones we are using now is going to be difficult, because right now we have super powerful transmitters. They are like 1 ampere in your pocket. Is like crazy.
It's not going to be more than that.
It could be worse than that at the radiation level.
Yeah, because the ITUR regulation, the same regulations that are applied to 2G, 4G, Wi-Fi, etc., also apply to 5G.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that if you want to critically assess 5G, that is necessarily the way to go.
Okay.
But who am I?
These waves means you will need to cut down trees.
Or buy more equipment.
Yeah.
Yeah,
which means extract more stones, more copper,
exactly. And e-waste,
or the UbiCore,
yeah. Umicore is a large Belgian mining company from the colonies that's still very active.
Yeah, and no. Now it's trying to extract, and now extract gold from circuits, and so they're doing more and more research on extraction.
So
we
I
don't know the process. I mean, they probably will use solvents and whatever and crap shit.
So in that sense, I think that taking the materiality, e-waste part, and like the materiality of the networks, which means production of more plastics, of more copper, of things that are not going to be in use for very long, that is a very, very, very good, or could be a productive venue of research.
But also how it will reconstruct urban space.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, this discourse that every light pole will have an antenna.
Yeah, which means that every light pole needs to be have clear fields of view in between everything. Mm-hmm. And
well, but yeah. what happens is that we are somehow. We need to be careful to use the right words, but we're connecting a lot of stuff to the internet, which is not necessarily very healthy for the internet.
Is it going to be the internet?
Currently, people still prefer to route everything over the internet because it's the cheapest. Mm. Because IP you can even run over barbed wire, right? And that is why the internet protocol has been so hugely successful, is that it works over copper, it works over glass, it works over satellite, and you can toss all kinds of weird things in between, because every day the internet is a genocide of packets, right? Like a lot of packets fall, die, misconfigured modems, but the internet can deal with it. IP is sufficiently flexible to deal with a lot of problems. And that's why we keep on using and reusing the internet, because it's a very good general purpose network. But with adding more and more stuff to the network, the complexities of the network also increase. And my Kenyan colleague, like at this, he said, like, why was God able to create the world in 6 days? And it's because there was no pre-installed user base, right? and the internet is now, if you look at only the baseband of a chip in your phone, it still has protocols that support GSM to fax. And there is so much legacy stuff that can be exploited, but that we also do not understand, because in theory the internet is end to end, which also means that the things that are in between do not announce themselves or tell us what they do. So, and this is the problem of intelligent middle boxes and a process called ossification. Mm-hmm. The concept of yeah, exactly. So this is a term you might know from biology. It's when it's a process that also naturally happens in humans when we get older, is that our bones get more brittle and less flexible, and the yeah, exactly. And the extreme part is hyper ossification, is where you just grow bone in places where it shouldn't be, right? So that was not just bone, that was also other tissues. But so whereas the internet used to be very flexible, we put all kinds of things in between to solve short-term problems. But these things did not anticipate how the internet was going to develop, and they are expecting a certain kind of traffic and thereby rejecting new kinds of traffic, which means that if we want to design for the future, it needs to look like the past. And that is definitely a hampering part of the network that we had. And if something is going to hamper the internet, is that it's becoming general purpose for the technology of the 80s and 90s. And that's why so many coders still work in a computer aesthetics that looks like the 80s or the 90s, is because the infrastructure thinks, works in that aesthetics and that grammar.
If I may derail a bit, have you tried?
I think we lost the track a long time ago. So.
this is gonna be. Have you tried talking about the positive sides of, or the perceived positive sides of one, why one might want a 5G network and why? Because before I, you know, for a moment I was like, it's a government, industrial communications, you know, collusion, and that it's so strange that they're shopping where it's they're going to be first. But this is of strategic importance, right? Governments know that if they miss this, they're going to miss out, because we are this is this polycentric world, and if the US does it first and Europe lags behind, or the Chinese are first, and there are specific applications, right, they're going to get ahead. So they,
well, that's what
from that side they can't afford
that, that's
lose,
what they
right?
say.
But it's true, no?
Is it?
Well, in
so what can 5G do?
Nokia's still researching on copper.
What we cannot do now?
Well, that's I have some ideas and you have others, but so.
So no, I really don't. I haven't seen.
Really, you don't.
I haven't seen a killer.
For you, it's not justified.
No, definitely not for the amount of investments that are going into it right now.
Well, but you know,
it becomes past dependency.
It's always like this with military, right? And here we are talking about, we're not talking about bonds, but we're talking about capacity to keep relevant, right?
Yeah, but relevance is a very... So, but, if you are going to invest a lot of resources into something, it's gonna be something.
No, I mean, we're putting 20 billion into nano, you know?
Yeah, so...
Who knows what that's gonna be, right? So,
yeah.
That's the FP8, big project, and probably 5G as well.
But this is the role of we can go back to 5G, but this is the role of socio-technical imaginaries. This is like, if we have an imaginary of we need to go that way, then policy, technology, and expertise will follow behind it, and it also allows, it creates a language for people to be able to collaborate, and then that becomes the new norm. But that doesn't mean it's a response to a thing we need, but it is a need that is created.
Well, but if you have a polycentric world, it's preempted by the fact that if one shall adopt it, everybody will, so you cannot, except if we would all collude worldwide, China, European Union, United Nations signed that there's going to be no 5G. However, if somebody has, and of course, you know, the users, come on, I mean, the Nokia people showed quickly, we don't have, right now we're working in the 100 millisecond delay networks. This is under microseconds, right? Sorry. Micro or milli?
Millisecond.
And this is under milliseconds. And everyone here can imagine technologies that are possible in that range and completely impossible in the 100 millisecond range, right?
But which ones do we need?
I can imagine
the ones that we need to be faster.
No, but also these super futuristic outlines, robots cannot even properly walk stairs.
Oh, right. They definitely can. Are you serious?
No, but
not any stairs.
Not
one specific stairs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So we're
that is probably untrue. Sorry.
No, I'm reading a lot of robotic papers.
Okay. Then I'm wrong. But
I'm dealing with text, and it's
OCR is good. Exactly.
Yeah,
OCR
yeah.
is
well,
super
OCR,
shit.
Yeah.
It's super situated, man. It works, but it works
for some things in some
it
conditions.
There is so much human labor put into it
Want to join on the bench here?
No, but I think it was very interesting, and we have really good recorders, and that's a bit sad.
Oh,
that's
just my
geek. That's me.
Yeah,
sorry.
That's very sad.
I ramble a lot.
No, some things are really, there was, you,
But so I mean, really for documentation, it's okay, Renny.
It's
no?
good, yes.
And I come back happily as well.
Yeah. No, like you said, things like, if you want to design for the future, it needs to look like the past.
Oh, that sentence is back tonight. It's in the slides.
And the internet is genocide of packets.
Then maybe we need to... to round up here, no? Like, because you will also...
Yeah, but it's always like a very small thing, right? And you can look at it from... and now hopefully, if we can already share the knowledge tonight, we can have more of a conversation. You know?
Yeah.
Because we need to... we need to find ways to... to break out. Or to or find a way to influence.
Yeah.
Because right now, there is this tussle. The infrastructure or the networks or the protocols or the architecture or the geography, you know, depends on your layer of analysis, is shaped in a power tussle between network providers and content providers. And each are helped with the help of equipment providers, and then nation states act as a proxy. But there is no end user at these tables, right? And whereas the governments are supposed to represent the needs of the end user, they really are in this geopolitical, polycentric...
But are they able to understand these processes, or are they captured by it?
The governments are users at this point.
Right now... I think sometimes the governments are playing the companies, and sometimes the governments get played. But
when are the governments playing the companies?
So, for instance, if you look at where you see now that the U.S. Has Cisco, and Madeleine Carr has an excellent paper for this. It's like how the internet was used by the U.S. to establish hegemony. Hegemony, control, right? And in this and in that sense, like liberalization and the retreat of government in the governance of the internet, like the stopping funding of the NSF net and retreating from the oversight of IANA, of ICANN. So the U.S. government releases control. Formal control over
the US government, which of course
is but they step back, but with that they increase the legitimacy of US control, which is that's a very statecraft kind of way of control, right? And governments simply have way longer timelines than companies have. Because they know in 100 years we will exist. Companies they have a timeline up to the next quarter. Or up to the next, maybe
also
the next year.
Governments also, like if the things change as parties or the policy.
Yeah, but, you
but
have
that's not bureaucracy, the diplomats.
It's not the president.
Exactly.
The
technocrats. And the technocrats, so they are smart. They are really smart. Yeah. And maybe we are underestimating how well they are organizing and aligning markets, because they have been negotiating treaties and doing global governance for centuries, and they have this institutional memory, and we're now reinventing multi-stakeholder governance, and we think we're all hip and hype, but they've been doing this as an and used violence and used all kinds of way to establish control, and we think we're reinventing this. No, but this is their game.
There is very different combinations, because the government-industry relation in China is very different from the government-industry relation in the US and in...
Yeah, but maybe not when it comes to telco. Like you saw it, for example, in the Netherlands breakdown when a Mexican company wanted to buy KPN. You know, like in a country which is completely neoliberal and which really believes in the selling of companies. But suddenly there were all these preventions being made from KPN falling into... under the umbrella of another company. So I think there you see then these kinds of interventions.
Which exactly. And I think that tension is also interesting to explore And what is, and also that something that so on the, we've been sold a bit on the liberal givenness of the efficiency of the market, right? That the market is the best at creating quick technological solutions. But if you now look at the platforms in China, they are better than the platforms we have. They are far more integrated, far more efficient APIs, and they integrate really well. Why do we have 6 different messaging apps on our phones, in which we need to remind who am I apping on Telegram, who am I apping on WhatsApp, who am I? I was in Canada 2 weeks ago, and people are still texting there. I was like, oh shit, I need to use my. Okay.
All our friends who don't have smartphones.
Okay, so. So that's the and in China it's integrated in one platform, and with that you can order taxis, you can do all kinds of things, and it works with like no friction. It's creepy, but it's also really impressive. Like being able to coordinate so well. Google, they have wars between departments through which stuff doesn't go through.
That's good.
But Google cannot fix it. But apparently the Chinese state is much better at fixing it. So we need also
to... Their control is bigger than...
Yeah, but we always thought that the state was incompetent at organizing innovation.
We have been fed this narrative.
Yeah, but which is...
In the last 30 years of... But if
you read the recent book about how to not network a nation, it shows how the Russian state really failed at building the internet. So being the first might actually not be an advantage. Right? So that would then argue why maybe it's better if we shouldn't do 5G now and just wait and learn
and
from
buy it cheap.
Buy it cheap and not go through it all.
There is this very nice book called The Shock of the Old by David Edgerton, like a historian, who's looking at technological imaginaries, where he's saying that we think we're in a certain age, so now we're in the age of AI and robotics, and we think the robots can walk up the stairs, but actually we might be at the peak age of copper telecommunications, as Nokia was showing us. So that somehow the imaginary is somewhere else than where the actual use and implementation is. And he has really nice statistics showing that the least innovative countries benefited most from technological progress. So then he shows like countries like Italy, for example, that didn't develop automotive industry, didn't innovate in it, but implemented it really well. And so we're able to build a large industry out of that. And he's suggesting that only one country managed to get this innovation equals prosperity right, and that was the US, and he says it's a historical anomaly.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you don't
and it's the story of Japan and motorcycles.
It's the story of the iPhone, because it's not like Nokia failed to innovate. They had Symbian years before. They just fucked up the moment when Symbian was going declining, right? And Migo should take over. And I think what you said before about the Chinese having better state control, that's why they have one messenger. I think they have one messenger just because they followed. And they could build a messenger from the beginning that integrated all of this, right? I think this is the dynamic. When you follow, that you can do things more. So maybe this would be a point where you could make advocacies to be like, let's go in second, right? Let's stop the government. Let's insert some. Let's insert a wrench into the engine a little bit, with exactly this engine, this intention to be. Let's be second, right? Let's be second. Let's pay less. Let's do it. Right.
But then you're also arguing a degrowth.
Not necessarily.
No, not necessarily, but yeah. But then you're up against the industry lobby, who for whom it's crucial that they continue churning out new stuff.
Yes, but you have a really funny, convincing argument that does resonate, I think.
Let's see.
Yeah, but it doesn't matter if it works, as long as they can sell stuff.
Right.
Well, it will work enough to distract your government from being able to operationalize being first movers.
No, it's super interesting. But
it's like everything at once.
Yeah, it's a mess. Of course.
Yeah.
But it helped